What's happening, weirdos?
Indeed.
Indeed.
Do the intro lightning fast. May the 4th, I have a show in LA. Go to PeteHolmes.com. Largo-LA.com. Got a show Saturday. That's tomorrow. If you want to come see me in LA, Largo-LA.com. Do that show monthly. And I have more and more tour dates at PeteHolmes.com. And you can also buy my vinyl for Dirty Clean. And all the proceeds go to Homeboy Industries. There's only a few left. But if you want to get a vinyl of Dirty Clean, the last remaining ones, go to PeteHolmes.com. All the proceeds go to Homeboy Industries. All right, everybody. Katie, roll those pre-rolls. Oh, there's only pre-rolls. You know what? Katie, roll those pre-rolls in the mid-rolls. We're just going to go into the episode.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. So get into it.
Yeah, that. There's a lot to cover this week for lots of things have been happening. Lots of things have been happening. Do you ever think, like, if you time traveled back to like a village, like a jungle community, mm-hmm. and you have like pop music, how popular you'd be? If just like not even just yeah. singing existing songs, but just kind of the fact that you can be like, what's going on with papaya today? Like, picture Jack Black, and he's an archaeologist.
Yeah.
And he finds a group of humans that have never encountered other humans. Mm-hmm. So it's an isolated civilization. And he just walks around being like, let's put macadamia nuts on our foreheads and sing the blues away. Do they love him or do they kill him?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. First of all, it's semi Back to the Future. You know, like, what if you bring
music. It's also, they did a movie about it called Yesterday, which is straight out of my brain, which is a guy, I don't know, he wakes up in some, he gets his head hit or he goes into a bathtub drain. Something happens and he goes into another world and it's the same world except the Beatles don't exist. So then he gets the thrill of being like, yesterday, all my trouble. And he has that great power. I've never seen it.
Wow.
Never seen it. It's one of those movies that calls to me on many airplanes, but I've never watched it.
I love that you explained it with such confidence and then said, I've never seen it.
There's certain ideas that are too close to ideas that I would have. It makes me upset. Like you re Greta Gerwig films.
Yeah, but I do like them, but I love hate them.
Yeah, you love that. I love you hate them, that you didn't come up with them. And that's kind of, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to myself.
Yeah,
what were you say?
That going back, okay, Jack Black in a village. It does beg the question, like, is pop music popular because it calls to all of us, like something inside of us is drawn to that beat, to that hook?
Oh, there are videos, and I recommend you watch them, of like Maasai warriors in Africa, and they play them like Billie Jean, and it's like boom, 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 and they're like, you know, I it's one of the most fun accents to do. Just like a kind of a standard Black Panther African accent, but I'm not going to do it.
Uh-huh.
But they, let me just say,
the spoiler,
they fucking love it, of course. And not, of course.
Yeah.
They would be like, this is not for me.
Well, that's what's interesting to me is I actually do think, you know, like when most of us were in high school and we were all like, fuck pop music, dude, you know, like.
Yeah, but they were tricking us, weren't they? Because my attitude was like, fuck pop music.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to listen to what my dad listens to.
Right.
But what they were giving us, right?
Yeah,
instead of pop music, was just new pop music.
Right.
So I was listening to like, they settled down and they started walking. Where were they going without ever knowing the way? And I was like, fuck yeah, something real. Something organic. Something for me. The voice of my generation. Same shit. Anyone can see the road and they come out and fade. Oh, fuck yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Not mass produced. Not
bubble
just
gum.
Not bubble gum off the assembly line.
That's something real.
I'm talking about some drawn from the marrow of a broken heart.
Mate,
all right? So fucking authentic that the suits don't have the prints all over. It's like, I smell sex and candy here. It's pop music.
It really was.
And I'm not mad at it, but there were 9,000 producers. Between that guy smelling sex and candy,
yeah,
there were so many producers making it perfect to be like, this will be a hit.
I mean, the fact that it is sex and candy is the most commercialized.
Yes.
Like, it's like advertisers'
words they
dreams.
Like.
Yeah,
yes. Exactly. And I remember watching an interview with that guy who wrote that song.
John Sex and Candy.
Johnny Sex and Candy.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, well, I walked into a room and my friends had clearly just been having sex. And I was like, I smell sex in here. And then we like put it in. We're like, I smell sex and candy.
Ew, I don't like that.
And I could be wrong. And you know what? The phone lines are open if John Sex and Candy is listening.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure stuff like that gets, you know, a little bit of nudging.
Oh,
a little
yeah.
bit of nudging. Some, you know, Christopher Walken in Wayne's World 2.
Yeah.
Or is that Wayne's World 1?
I can't tell you. I know, but
World
I legally
1.
Can't say. I signed an NDA for that very specific thing.
I'm out here. You know, you can sign NDAs that no one asked you to.
What do you mean?
What I'm saying is, like, I print up NDAs, non-disclosure agreements for Apple that says I can't talk about the Vision Pro. They never asked me to do that, but I just sign it just for the thrill.
Just for the thrill of breaking it.
Breaking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because then
I'm
going to
sign an NDA saying that you can't talk about Tony Robbins. Or I could.
Why'd you have to pick me? Why? Get out there. See, I can make fun of him too. Love him.
Yeah,
but
no,
also,
I love him too. I'm sure he's.
Get out there.
I don't know if I love him, but.
This is interdimensional evil Tony Robbins. Can't clap your hands. Change your state.
An impression no one asked for or wanted. Thank you.
The only person who would get it, Tony Robbins, wouldn't like it.
No.
It's like, who is it for?
Who is this for? It's just for you. And you know what? Sometimes
like it.
It should be just for you.
Just like a massage day or 9 holes on the dog leg par 3.
If you were a golfman.
If? Baby, you don't know what I do in the middle of the night. You don't know what I do. God damn. Go on. I love that one.
But we're not going to do the African voice.
You don't know the race of this voice. You don't know my race.
I guess
I'm sorry if that sounds like a type of person to you. Maybe
honestly,
you need to work on that.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Honestly, it does sound a lot like Leon Redbone, and he's white.
Leon Redbone?
He does the voice of the snowman in Elf.
That's a white guy?
I'm pretty sure. Whose phone is here? Look him up.
I have the computer open.
I'm pretty sure.
Leon Redbone?
I hope I'm right. Yeah. Leon Redbone.
Leon Redbone is white.
I told you.
And he looks like John Hodgman in disguise.
The guy who sings Baby It's Cold Outside with
Baby It's Cold
Zoe.
Oh my, that's him?
That's him. And you're basically doing that voice. So
is this an Elf fan podcast?
Yes.
Hey, buddy, why are you so sad?
It's the same.
Now I can do it.
Now you can do it. And
now
just say,
I can do it.
And then before anybody gets mad, just
I go,
it's Leon Redbone.
It's Leon Redbone. And then if people go like, I never want to give you up.
Yeah.
I'm Rick Roll. Rich rolling is when you tell someone there's a cupcake in your pantry and you open it and there's an ultra marathon. You got Rick rolled.
Wait, Rick rolled or Rich rolled?
Rich roll. Shit!
I'm sorry.
No.
I should have just let it go.
I did that to Jimmy Carr this week. I said he looked like the villain puppets in Toy Story 4. And then later in the conversation, very graciously, Jimmy Carr said, and this coming from the guy who looks like the villain in Toy Story 3. Like a callback. And I went, Toy Story 4. And he went, you could have let it go. Could have went it. Could have looked the other way.
This isn't even
how he talks.
It isn't?
It is, but it isn't.
Yeah, there's so many different
that's what I mean.
British dialects.
I'm doing give me something real.
Yeah, this that's like more Liverpool.
We want the real.
Yeah.
Not some corporate McDonald's.
It's the best one.
For your ears.
But I like the Queen, the Queen's posh. And then it's posh. Like,
building a mystery. That's it.
Circling back.
That's it. That's the sound of a human soul.
We're circling back. But you know
come
what?
Come out of night.
I really, okay, so I've been thinking about this, going back to the pop music, because I the woman who is almost a year too late for the Taylor Swift summer, but I watched her concert on Netflix or whatever it's on.
I don't think that's a thing anymore. People just are watching stuff whenever they watch.
I know, but this summer, everyone was going to her concerts, and it was like the summer of Taylor Swift. It was and now the white it's March.
Earbuds. It was the white earbuds of... like a pop music event.
Yes.
Status.
And it's March now. And I'm like, okay, guys, I watched it and I'm ready to talk about it.
That's a Jim Gaffigan joke.
Where he
goes, you know, when you watch a movie 6 months after everyone else and they don't want to talk about it. And you're like, I just watched Heat. Who wants to talk about Heat?
That's exactly how I feel. But I won't talk too much about it except to say it's phenomenal. Anyone will enjoy it. That's why she's the most famous person in the world. Is like literally I could show it to any member of my family and they would love it. Except really? For maybe your mom because she doesn't love anything that I love.
She needs to put on a coat.
She didn't like the Barbie movie. And I remembered when I just rolled past that. Because she saw that I was weird Barbie.
Yeah.
For Halloween. And then just the most recent conversation, she was like, I saw that Barbie movie from your costume. Like the movie from is from costume. My costume. And she was like, I didn't care for it, but I liked you. You mean your character? And I was like, thank
that
you.
That is so my mom's real time reality building crystalline. It's like a superpower.
Yeah.
She saw you in a costume. Then she said, I saw the movie from your costume.
Right.
Because I saw the costume first, so that's first.
Yeah, that's first.
And I didn't like it, the movie, which came second.
Yeah.
But I did like your part because I saw that first.
Right.
So that's your part.
And associates it with me.
It's actually, yeah.
And it's sort of her way of kind of like she can't.
Siding with you.
Yeah. She can't be totally not negative, but she's being on my side.
Yeah. No, it's true. It really is. I actually meant it sort of as like both of my parents are phenomenal world builders.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I'm like, I think I'd do that too.
Well, everybody does it to
everybody
different
does it to a certain
degrees.
Extent.
Everybody, it's a race doing it. It's okay.
Give me that rail. Give me that rail. Broke into the old apartment. Hell yeah. That's the rail. This musician bled on the page. I know who I want to take me. Fuck yeah. This is what I mean. Get out of here, Mum. Get out of here, Dad. This isn't for you. This isn't for you. And I don't want the world to see me. Be like, Dad. This music, you won't understand it. And I say, baby, it's 3 a.m. I must be lonely. Fuck off, Dad. Fuck off.
I really do enjoy it.
It's gonna. That's too funny. That has to be a bit.
And you are thinking of these songs at a rapid rate.
That's part of the fun.
That's part of it.
Go on.
Yeah. So anyway, it's so good. And it. That's the thing is it made me think about pop music because I was like, everybody, she can write a hook that just goes directly inside a person and is like, well, that's something my whole body wants to hear.
Yeah.
And she's written like 100 of them.
No, I know. She's very.
It's unbelievable.
Very taken with her.
Yes. I'm very taken with this Tay Swift.
She's very good.
And she's also very nerdy and like kind of awkward in her body.
Yeah.
And incredibly vulnerable. And it turns out like that's what we wanted. That's what most people wanted. Obviously, there's you well, got your like. There,
I've never seen a moment of her, but isn't like Ariana Grande the like.
That's who I was going to say.
Would you like this cleaned up?
I can't believe that you just said that. Because really? I was going to say on the other side of the spectrum, and I don't know that much about Ariana Grande, but we have her, which is funny because Taylor Swift has a line in one of her songs that's like, sometimes I feel like everybody's just a sexy baby and I'm the monster on the hill.
And like, I'm a monster on the hill. You could have sang it.
I could have.
And she means Ariana?
I don't know if she does, but that's who I think of. Throwing
shade on a sexy baby? That's not cool.
I mean, I don't
know. I'm just kidding.
Now you're on Ariana Grande. I don't know if she means just her, but that's definitely a type, is just sort of like, ooh, you know, and like, ooh.
Whoops, did I hit that note perfect? My boobies.
It's like you're not surprised if you see them with a ring pop, you know? And
does she use ring pops?
I don't know, but don't you have no trouble picturing her with the ring pop?
I can't picture Taylor Swift with a ring pop. No. Maybe a candy necklace. Maybe. But she's not eating it because she's too worried that she's got like celery in her teeth or something. Saying that is like,
she's flossing with the string.
That's it. T Swift has a candy necklace because maybe when she's in the limo alone, she just gives it a quick floss because she's a vulnerable one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But obviously Ariana Grande is so famous too. So people love that too. But it seems like I'm so proud of us that most of us like clearly a theater nerd who is hot, of course, as well, because we're America, but like a theater nerd who is like vulnerable and always singing about getting broken up with or breaking up with somebody. And, you know, and we're just like, great. Thank you.
I love Taylor's new song, Jake Gyllenhaal. You need to chillenhaal. It's when she was saying like, relax and get out of here. Hey, Jake Gyllenhaal, you need to make a mistake. If you make a mistake, you need to chill. See,
it's hard. It's hard to do what she's doing.
When I think I can write pop music, which is 89% of the time, 89% of the time, I'm going around like, I ain't impressed. I can do it. I woke up, I think I've heard the song, I'm dressing. But lately I've been dressing for revenge.
Yeah,
vigilante shit. I think I've heard that song twice.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up the other night and it was in my head like it was playing on the radio.
Yes.
And I didn't even knew. I knew the lyrics.
Yeah.
But it was like, no, I'm getting mad. I'm getting mad. And I was like,
the
what?
Boop.
Yeah. 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 Keep going.
Lily, I've been dressing for revenge.
Like, what the fuck?
It's such a good song.
I don't say that's the other thing. I can tell you how. I've heard it twice.
I know. That's the other thing about, like, and what you really see in this Eras tour, again, I know I'm like 9 months too late, but is like, she's done all the genres. I mean, not all of them, but she's done a lot of different, like, every album is really different. And she's like, do you want me to write a hook like this? Or do you want me to write a hook like this? Or I can do country, or I can do synth, where I can do pop, or I can have beats. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's very, very impressive. And I hope you're sold on Taylor Swift, everybody.
Me? Oh, yeah.
I'm just laughing that I'm like, obviously we're in, people love her.
I get a little T-Swift fatigue because like that album, Midnights.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm out here. I'm in the car and you're like, play Taylor Swift's newest album. Just assuming it's that. There's been like three since that one.
No, that's the most recent one.
Tell that to Siri.
Well, Siri doesn't know what she's talking about.
You're not counting, like, she puts out some, like, it's an album, it's just three songs, it's just her and Jake Gyllenhaal saying Chillin' Gall. What I'm saying is there's so much coming out.
Yeah.
By the way, real quick, we have some real things to talk about.
Yeah, let's.
But I do want to say this. What the fuck is going on with, I know, one time, it doesn't matter, Spotify, you are amazing, and iTunes, you're amazing. Maybe it's just the Tesla interface, but if I'm in the car and I just want to listen to an album, I'll search 1989 by Taylor Swift. Search it. Go to the thing. Albums. Album. It just starts playing. You hit the album and it just starts playing a song.
And then the radio.
And then radio.
Yeah.
The fuck? Like, really? Like, really, if this is relatable,
mm-hmm.
let me know somehow. Because if it is, if we're all having this experience, I need to yell about it on stage. It's ridiculous. I want to hear the album. And the only way I can do it is I put it on Bluetooth. And then if you say to your phone, play the album 1989, it'll play it from the beginning to the end. It'll do it. It'll play an album.
Beautiful
album, great album. I'm putting out an album. It's a folk album. It's me. Just me and my six strings and Donnie. It's a little bit out of tune. Keep it folksy. Keep people thinking. I'm the kind of guy that has a half quart of milk. I have a half quart of milk on the table. It's a little bit warm. A little bit warm. So I drink it just to give that quality to my voice. I felt you starting to doubt it.
I was losing interest. I was losing interest.
And it juiced me.
I like Donnie and the Six Strings.
Donnie and the Six Strings. And I got a call.
And then I was like, all right, what are we doing?
Yeah,
and then
ready to get back. Back to the podcast. Keep it crispy. That's what I've always said.
But then you won me back in the end.
That's the thrill of my life. Lose them, then get them. That's what they call me. All right, you break the sad news. Sad news alert. It's not me. I don't know how to say it's not major, meaning it doesn't affect you guys. We had some sad news.
Yes.
Big picture, everything is okay, but we have a little loss to share. And if you don't want to hear a loss, maybe skip ahead 10 minutes.
Because I'm putting a cap
on this topic.
I was going to say 10 minutes is a long time.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about it for 10 minutes. But you skip ahead if you just don't want any bad news. Good news for people who love bad. Good news for people who love bad news. Modest Mouse. Love Modest Mouse. Love a mouse that doesn't come out squeak, squeak, squeak. Who's this confident mouse? He comes out. He's grabbing a piece of cheese. Who do you think you are, this confident mouse? Give me a Modest Mouse. Give me a beautiful Modest Mouse writing indie rock music, rock and roll.
Is Modest Mouse?
Oh yes.
I'm not asking you, Donald.
I'm the only one here. I'm the only one here.
Oh my God!
Tired of these confident mice. Mickey, so confident. Mighty Mouse, too confident.
That's what I was gonna ask.
Speedy Gonzales, slow down. Too confident. Give me a nice Modest Mouse.
Oh my God! He doesn't like a modest anything.
I love a meek mouse. Go ahead. I'm back. Pete's
I was just going to say, is Modest Mouse a response to Mighty Mouse? Or is it just a...
Oh, but God. Yeah, maybe.
But also, Mighty Mouse is a reference that nobody knows anymore.
Which makes it double covered. So then they're like, cool, indie rock band twice.
That's true.
All right, so tell the sad.
It's like 10 days ago, I guess almost 2 weeks ago now, our Brody boy passed away.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. He was sort of like, he had like diarrhea and vomiting.
Okay, I don't know if we need that. I thought you were going to be like, the symptoms were pussy, like a pussy. Well, how do you spell pussy? It's just pussy, isn't it? Just pussy. There's no way to spell pussy. Start doing bits.
He was old. Well, he is old. He was
Brody
old. Brody been old.
Which is funny because he looked very young.
And he was like, other than having some spurs in his spine and, you know, kind of having a hard time going up the stairs occasionally.
He held books closer to his face when he was reading.
Yeah.
I noticed.
And then further.
And sometimes further. I was like, which is it?
Trying to find.
He was very slow up the stairs and he was panting all the time.
Yeah. But other than that, he really was fine.
He was fine.
I mean, like some dogs really decay for a long time and that's not what was happening. I was just going to say he like had some tummy issues for like a couple days. It wasn't anything serious. And then like last Sunday night, he didn't get up to bark when friends came over. And I was like, oh boy, I'm going to have to take him to the vet tomorrow. And you had just left for your retreat, which we'll talk about. And then he was like panting pretty hard that night and he wouldn't get up and he had peed and I carried him up the stairs so that he could sleep in the room with all of us, with me and Leela, like he always does. And I was like, I'm a little worried, but still was hopeful that because I've known dogs that breathe like that. And, you know.
Yep.
And then, yeah. And he passed in the night in the room with us. And
with you and Leela.
With me and Leela.
I wanted to say, like,
peaceful.
people, the joke area would be like everybody's upset but me, because on this podcast, I've ranted a lot about Brody.
Mm-hmm.
The way Chris and I were talking about it this morning at coffee was, I was like, Brody was difficult for me because he was this, mostly because of the guilt I felt that I didn't vibe with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because he annoyed me, like his noisiness, his barking scared me, his click clacking, his following, his like all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
None of that is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it got me. He like had my neurotic number, but even that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was that I felt horrible guilt that this bunny ear, beautiful slip inside of a slipper Muppet puppy that I loved very much. I spent so much of my time wishing I wasn't frustrated with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was horrible. But the joke area aside, it's been super sad. And we realize we've had him for 11 years?
No, almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years. Okay. So
he was 12 years old, though.
The memories that came flooding back is wild. He was there for so much. He was there before Leela.
I know. He was there like pretty much right when we moved in together.
Yeah.
And then in our wedding, and there when I was pregnant and with Leela. And, you know, we took him to New York with us when we would shoot Crashing. And I mean, he saw us through a lot of life in the move to Ojai. And that's the thing is, yeah, he was a real soul dog for me because he saw me through so much, and because
you had a framed picture of him when you were pushing at
when
the
I was
hospital
in labor. Yeah. Like he was like my first real baby.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I really, really felt this one. And I do feel like he, you know, there's all these thoughts that like, you're like, who knows, but it does help the grief process to think. I had a friend who said, you know, cause we thought he was gonna go about a year ago, actually, like when we first moved to Ojai, I remember he was really sick and we had just moved to Ojai, and that's when I had the miscarriage, which I think we talked about on the pod. I'm not sure, but
I don't think so. Knowing us.
Yeah. And it was while he was sick. And I was just like, I can't handle this dog dying. He cannot die right now. Like, there's just no way.
And he stuck around.
And I feel like he did stick around an extra year and a half to.
And he got his glorious Ojai time.
Yes.
It's the same as anything passing or anyone passing. It's like, you think about like, oh, I'm so glad he got that time.
Yeah.
And you really, I found out while I was on my Rupert Spira retreat, like you said, we'll talk about that, but I didn't really feel it as much until I got home. And you said this, but I had the same experience when I'm cutting the crusts off Leela's sandwich and he's usually right there to eat them, and he wasn't there. And you're just sort of like, oh, wow. And it really hits you.
Yeah.
My not magical, but like my way of being like, you're like, oh, he gave me another year and a half. In the weirdest way, I was like, I feel like he was like, all right, dad's out of town. And I'm not.
Yes.
And I'm not, like, I'm not even going to bother him.
Yeah. Somebody told.
Oh, that's
wait,
silly.
Did you say that? Or I think our friend Jen said that. She was like, it's like he waited till Pete was out of town because he like good did sense. That for you.
Yeah, he did it as a gift to me.
Yeah.
He also, in the weirdest way, as a gift, we have, you know, my brother-in-law has a dog that's like 3,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that's how all dogs died.
Yeah.
You know, one of their eyes is like looking at their brain and the other one's like drooping out and they're just like covered in all sorts of shaved surgeries and stuff. And
yeah.
He's like, ugh.
That's how often
he
how
was
it
just
is.
Like, I'm out. And I'm like, Brody.
I know.
Wow. It,
and he did give us the gift of not having to make the decision of like, this guy is suffering and we have to decide, which is so hard for anybody who's had to do that. That's just the hardest thing. But yeah, and that night, so also my friend said that she thinks that he waited until I did this, you know, big thing that we've referenced on the podcast where I've sort of,
cleared it with your fam.
Yeah.
Fam
just,
stuff.
Just cleared out a lot of stuff. Yeah. And so I just recently did that and went through the grieving process of that. And then that night, the night that he died, we had friends over for Sunday dinner. And I was just saying to them, I was going on and on about like how cleared out I feel, how transformed I feel, like that I feel like I'm on the other side of this and it's been a hard winter, but like spring is coming. And so I was just going on and on about how well I was doing. And it's just sweet to think of like...
He ushered you.
Yeah. And him being like, okay, okay now.
And like, I really think got it for he me. Taught me so much as well. I mean, all of those lessons, they weren't easy learned.
Yeah.
But like he really taught me a lot about loving something that isn't easy for you. I know it's weird now that he's passed. I'm feeling the temptation to sort of gloss over all that. But I think the work I did with Brody is more precious than just having like a pristine.
Yeah.
Like the memory that I have, one of the most vivid memories is when I was shooting HBO's Crashing. Mm-hmm. And I was, you were out of town for a week. So it was me and Brody in that. And the elevators didn't work in this building. Remember this building in Williamsburg? Mm-hmm. And you were gone. I keep telling you that. You weren't there. You had abandoned me. And I think my call time was like, you know, probably 5 a.m. or something. One of these days where I'm like, I don't fuck around. I'm not one of those stay out till 1, even though you have to shoot at 5. I go to bed at like 8 o'clock if I have to get up at 5 to shoot all day. So I go into bed, Brody, and it's raining really hard. And Brody like got me up like twice in the night. To like have some sort of I miss mom diarrhea. Ugh. But I know, but I really do look back on it fondly. Because even though that's frustrating, one of the things I like about Pete is if it's inevitable, there's nothing I can do. Mm-hmm. I have to do it. There might be some frustration. But then when we're going down, he's giving me looks. I swear it's like, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then he's peeing. And then we go back and we're wet. And it's just sort of like dogs in general, and certainly babies, are just like disruptions. Mm-hmm. And when you look back on your life, it seems, or when I'm looking back on my life, it seems that so many of the peak memorable and treasured moments are during or just after a disruption. Yeah. It's like how you get along in disruptions.
Right.
It's like glorious summers are just like one block thing. And they can be kind of hard to remember.
Right.
But like little disruptions, it's like we invite these chaotic things into our life because there's a wisdom beyond our reason
that
goes like, I can't just go around eating sandwiches and mailing letters. It's not gonna work. Get that fucking dog over here. Then reposting bits. I got so many, not to make it about getting something from Brody, but the number of jokes I had about him really spoke to his impact on my life and how much I was processing and how much he sort of brought out of you and brought out of me and all this growth. And now I really feel like 10 years of this, I'm like, I think I understand what it is now. You said, you tried to tell me with Brody, like part of the joy is having something that's dependent on you. And I'm like, but he's dependent on me. And you're like, that's part of the fun. Now I think I'm starting to understand that. Because it's been Brody and it's been Leela as a baby.
Right. And the joy is taking care of something else.
Yeah.
And like getting outside of yourself.
Acts of service.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that does pay out. Like it snuggles you. It's so thrilled when you're home. It's, you know, so it's not just that, but it is like, it's just the act of being like, this is, I'm going to get out of my own shit for a minute because this Muppet needs feeding. And I really want to say that I am so impressed with you and how open you were to this. I mean, when we first got him, it was such a difficult thing for you.
Yeah, I remember like my body couldn't even relax.
Yeah.
Like you really, people that were raised with dogs or no dogs just sort of merge and they know all this language, body language. And I was like, ha. I had the energy of someone who had been attacked by a dog.
Yeah.
Even though I hadn't been attacked by a dog. So I really appreciate your kindness.
It's been 10 years of watching you use Brody as a way to grow and open and
And we went out strong too.
You did. You guys were
meaning
close.
The past year even after I had that, maybe it was less than a year, but after I had that reading from Krista Rauschenberger.
Rauschenberg.
I always get it wrong. Krista Rauschenberg. She was like, "You're projecting a lot of your mom stuff onto your dog." And I was like, And yeah. It was incredible. And she was, remember, people that listen to the pod, they know she was like, start saying to your dog, "You're not my mom."
Yeah.
And I did that. And I did it almost every day. And we started snuggling. And I realized, I was like, oh, wow. Wilson, the volleyball, we are symbol making things. And I had let Brody, my unguarded thoughts had allowed for Brody to become a symbol of just like, desperate need and like endlessly seeking Susan, just like,
yeah,
and that wasn't fair. And I'm glad I figured that out because I never walked by him without scratching him, saying good boy. Like it was just a rule. Yeah. I got up to pee and I would just give him a little pet and say good boy. So we went out real strong.
That's right. I saw that too. And you know, I don't know, but. So this is like new agey for sure. And I'm not saying it's for sure true, but I tend to like to think that we have like these soul contracts with different beings in our world. And you and Brody may have had a soul contract where he was a little like his purpose was helping you work through some of this difficult stuff. Yeah. And you know, that doesn't mean every dog you will have that kind of soul contract with, you know? Yeah. So I
agree with that. That's what it feels like in my experience at least.
Yeah.
And what it's funny, like I always say the first time I smoked weed and I got paranoid, I was like, what they don't tell you is that paranoid people think they're right.
Yeah.
Similarly, when you have soul work to do or a contract for someone to work on something and grind it or, you know, shave it down with you, what people often leave out of nice ideas like that is, and you're going to hate it.
Right. Of course. You know what I mean? It's going to be hard. And
there's going to be parts that you're not even proud of where you are like, ah, well, Brody, you fucking scared me or whatever it is.
Yeah.
As if he could understand me. And that's even, the humiliations were never ending. I would be like, you scared me. And I'm like, why am I telling him? He doesn't know anything. Like, so silly.
Yeah, but you did a really good job. And isn't it weird that like, it was that it was sort of in the air for the, like a few days leading up to him dying. Because I think, I don't know if it was last podcast episode or one before, but remember he came in and like pawed the door open and I was like, Brody, that's so cute. And then he like hit the train set. Isn't it so weird when something in your house dies and you're like, it was this train set. Like that I'm this train set. The train set is still set up.
Yeah.
So weird.
I know.
But that he like hit it and it, you know, made a sound or whatever. And I said, one day, very soon, Brody's going to be dead. And we were going to miss this. And you said like, I know that's part of the thing for me.
Right.
And it was like days after that. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about that sort of stuff very much.
No, no. And I like took a random video of me just petting him because I was like, I should do like a Brody appreciation post. And then I didn't end up posting it. And I was like, I'm still glad I have that because he was specifically cute the way that like you would pet him and he would like lean into you.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I have that. And then also I had our Paige, our assistant and our friend and like a caretaker of Brody.
Yeah.
The day before he died, she sent me just a really cute picture of him posing with flowers. And she was like, how's Brody? And like, it was so crazy. Yeah,
he had an impact on a lot of people.
He really did. A lot of friends, like babysitters, house sitters, just friends who came over to the house a lot, like all kind of came out of the woodwork to talk about what a special boy he was.
And he was a good boy.
He was a really good boy.
We used to say this again on the pod. We talked some smack, worked through some stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like, we always used to say he's 99.9% perfect. He just barks and scares the shit out of me.
Yeah. He just barks and never stops barking.
Right. It's not just barking. It's like a ceaseless, like he, again, he'd even make it on his face. Like, I'm sorry. I can't stop.
Yeah. He was an anxious boy.
Yeah.
But I really grieved. I mean, like I spent a good 5 days sort of just sobbing around the house, yeah. Which is why I'm able to talk about it this way. I guess I wanted to acknowledge like how sad it really is and was.
Yeah.
But I do feel like because I heavily let myself sort of grieve it, I feel, you know, okay about it now. Yeah. And I did like spend time with his body before they came to pick him up. I brushed him and read him Mary Oliver poems and opened the window and saged and said thank you. And I said, like, please visit us. And there have been the occurrences.
We've all seen him. Yeah.
We've all seen him around the house and in the same spot.
Yeah.
And at the same time.
Yeah.
And when I was telling you about him, or when we were talking about him on the first night that you came back, the lights flickered.
Yeah.
That these lights never have flickered before or since.
Yeah.
So I think he is visiting us.
Yeah, just more quietly, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Brody. R.I.P. Okay, we'll be right back. And we are, as teased in the first half, we're going to talk about my Rupert Spira retreat.
My Rupert treat.
Which was great. So we'll be right back and get into that. Pardon the interruption, weirdos. This episode is brought to us by our friends at Modern Mammals. You guys hear me talk about Modern Mammals all the time because before they were a sponsor of this show, I was just all in as a fan, pure and simple. It's the only shampoo that I've ever found that cleans your hair but doesn't fry it out and dry it out, making it look like shit. That's as simply as I can put it. I used to not wash my hair. That was my secret. And my hairdresser would always be like, please clean your hair. Please. And I couldn't. If I washed it, it looked like tumbleweed that just came out of the dryer. It would look terrible. It was unmanageable. It was flying all over the place. I had to put all these different products in it. Modern Mammals is the one-stop shop. You wash it, you clean it, no product. It's just ready to go. Perfect hair, 30 seconds. Every single time, no waiting period. So many guys I talk to have the same strategy. Just don't wash your hair. Clean your hair, though. Clean it, but don't shampoo it. Modern Mammals it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Perfect hair in 30 seconds. So many men have converted to Modern Mammals. They have so many. 40,000 guys have left incredible reviews. They are out of their mind for this product. Once you try it, you will be hooked for life. I am positively hooked for life, which is why I'm always giving it to guests and talking about it and blabbing about it. You won't go back to regular shampoo after this. It's a small, wonderful company, grassroots. I love the guys that are working on it. And they basically just had a passion to set out to make a new shampoo alternative specifically for guys. They have bars for no plastic, no fragrance, or bottles. It's like a magic gray mud that I love the feeling and the smell of that gets your hair perfect every single time. 6 seconds to perfect hair. You can try both the bar and the bottle by going to modernmammals.com/weird, and you'll get both of them, a special combo deal for $44. That's the bottle and the bar for $44. They last a really long time, by the way. modernmammals.com/weird. Seriously, no going back. Amazing. 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 What am I saying? I'm just saying amazing, but it's true. We're also brought to us by our friends at Vita Coco. You see it on the set. I love Vita Coco. When I am feeling sluggish or dehydrated, or if I just want a treat, something sweet that isn't filled with chemicals and added sugars, but something sweet and delicious, I reach for a Vita Coco. It is real. It is natural. It is from the earth, but still tastes like a treat. And Vita Coco is the number one coconut water brand in the United States. Get some balance in your life with healthy beverages that are actually fun. Vita Coco comes in wonderful flavors, not just coconut, but pineapple and peach and mango, which are incredible. Coconut water, as we know, has nutrients to supercharge you and make you feel good. Helps amazingly with the recovery after a workout. Vita Coco replenishes you and it keeps you performing at your best and shining strong for the rest of your day. It's also a wonderful mixer for those of you making cocktails and mocktails out there. Throw some tequila, agave, and a squeeze of lime, and you have an amazing cocktail that also has electrolytes and nutrients in there, which means you have a better feeling morning after. So two birds, one stone, delicious and floods your system with those things you need to not feel like crap in the morning. Or if you're like me, use it to make a mocktail. Because of the electrolytes, coconut water can help you bring you back to life if you're feeling hungover as well. So take 25% off and get Vita Coco shipped to your door by using code WEIRD20 on VitaCoco.com. That's how I get it. You ship it. It's there. It's boom. Put it in the fridge. Ready to go. Prefer to shop in store? You can find Vita Coco at most big name grocery stores in your city, as well as in superstores like Walmart, drugstores like CVS, and your local convenience stores and bodegas. That is it, everybody.
Keep it style real.
Okay.
Keep it style real. Give you the authentic, genuine article, mate. None of that fucking pop phone satellite in my eyes. That's it. That's the fucking blood marrow.
Blood marrow.
Oh my God. I'm going to take off this bandage.
I see that. You Ooh. Didn't have to tell them. Just to.
Let it breathe.
Let it breathe. Okay,
that's what my arm's going to look like when I'm old. Will you love this arm?
Of course I will. It's funny. So to get into the Rupert Spiro retreat, I had a swollen, it's like the kind of thing, like if you really dug with your teeth, like a hangnail and tore it off like a fucking lunatic and it got infected and then it swells up. I had that for the first 3 days of the Rupert Spiro retreat, but I didn't, I had no memory, which means I know I didn't bite it.
Like, it just was like a random...
Maybe I gave it like a micro bite and it just so happened that there was like pigeon shit in my mouth. like I infected it. It was incredible. But it was this like crazy throbbing, horrible. It would wake me up at night because I'd brush it up against stuff. But anyway, Epsom salts, baby. Get yourself some Epsom salts.
Epsom salt. Maybe it was a little staph infection.
Could have been. Yeah. But anyway, the long and the short is I went on a 7-day Rupert Spiro event. Anybody that listens to this pod knows I'm obsessed with Rupert Spira, but it was 7 days. And on the way in, I got really nervous. I was driving. I said goodbye to you guys. Mm-hmm. And I was driving to the airport and I got really nervous that I was like, what am I doing? Like, for two reasons. One, 7 days seems like a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Rupert Spira is a non-dual teacher who... And the idea that we're all one and that I could actually like slip into a felt and abiding understanding of the oneness of the universe seemed kind of frightening. You know, there's ways that that's cool.
Well, your ego was
That's exactly
maybe.
Right. And like, my ego was like, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell you this, but I called Mirabai Starr, who knows Rupert and is a feminine mystic.
Mm-hmm.
As Greg Boyle says, Mirabai is a mystic who writes about mystics. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I was just adjusting her bra.
I had to adjust my bra, okay?
Well.
When am I supposed to not?
All righty. Give me that rail.
No one would have known if
I know, but they would know that suddenly I'm like, Rupert Spiro retreat, because all the blood left my brain.
You are fun to live with for me.
Ah, then I sat in meditative silence. Remember when we went and saw whale sharks and I would be swimming? And there's whale sharks. And then every once in a while, I'd look and see your butt. And I'd be like, that's how exciting your butt is to me.
Aww.
Is that I'm like, there's a whale shark. And then a butt I see every day. And I'm still kind of like, ooh.
You're nice to me.
A whale shark is the size of a bus. It's a whale with the mouth of a shark.
You just give like some... facts about whale sharks.
I just want people to know how much I like that booty. All right. So called Mirabai and I was like, I'm kind of freaking out. And she was like, you know what she said? Do you have a guess?
Well,
don't have to guess.
Okay. I would say is, did you call her because I told you that she acknowledged when I went on her retreat,
yes,
I was anxious, and she like acknowledged in a group email. That's right.
Forgive me. That it's like good to acknowledge that at the beginning of these things we can be anxious.
Yes, and that's a common thing. That and as why. Soon as she did that, I was like, oh, okay, great. Right.
So I called her exactly because of that, mm-hmm. and I was like, I'm just a little nervous. What if I dissolve? What if this, like, you know, enlightenment and insanity, mm-hmm. pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close. Enlightenment is sort of like a controlled, like, I'm not trying to be funny or whatever, dismissive of anybody, but somebody on the street, mm-hmm. that's yelling, I'm that tree, mm-hmm. or Rupert being like, essentially what I am is, and what this tree is made of the same thing.
Yeah.
Similar. So anyway, I got a little nervous and I said that to Mirabai and she was like, yeah, you should be.
Oh my God.
That's what she said. She was really fierce. She was like, you're going to see a teacher that is famous for his precision at disarming an ego.
Wow. And it's like,
yeah. And she's like, when I do grief work, I don't tell people it'll all be okay. I tell them like, this sucks. It's over. We lost something. Let's look at it.
Yes.
She's like, and you're afraid. Yeah, you should. That checks out. And it made me feel so much better. It really
she's
did.
She's so good.
She's so good. I never would have predicted it. She was also tender and sweet. She always is. But she was just like, well, I'm not going to tell you to not be scared. But then she was like, oh, this is exactly what she said. She said, I'm glad you're going in with your hair on fire. It's like respectful.
Yeah, it's reverent. You know what? I just, I love her so much. And I do think she is such a wise teacher that she knows who she's talking to and how to talk to them.
Yeah, that's right.
So she knows she can be that way with you.
Yeah.
And it's probably really refreshing for her that she doesn't have to mince words and be really tender and, you know, in that way.
Yep.
But also this is just what I was talking to my brother about. It's like the difference between she's a 4 on the Enneagram and the difference between healthy 4s and unhealthy 4s is like the most stark difference. Yeah. Is it stark?
Yeah.
Difference than any other number.
Yeah.
And 4s can really get enveloped into their sadness and their like dark, their shadow.
Yep.
But a converted 4 or a healthy 4 is exactly what Mirabai is, which is where she's like the gift that she gives the world is like the is a ambassador for darkness and shadow.
Yeah.
And also for light, but like for looking at the whole story and seeing how things like fear and anxiety and grief are gifts because it can be transmuted into presence and
she makes
connection and a lot of good things.
Sculptures like Stonehenge, you know, like mm-hmm. there's theories that Stonehenge is to like frame the sun, meaning scary, gothic, weird things. But then when the sun comes up, you go like, it all makes sense.
Exactly what she does. And it's such a gift. And she really, the message of being like, the actual subtext, I think, in being like, you should be afraid is you should be afraid and you don't be afraid of your fear.
Yeah.
Like you should be afraid and it's okay to be afraid.
Well, it's also, it's okay to be afraid because you are afraid.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. You're not wrong for it.
And that's a very wonderful thing to do to a feeling.
And she also, the way to love 4s, one of the ways to love 4s is to be really honest about your own pain and your own. And that's a lovely thing too. So she knew you were gone because you called her. And when she saw my post about Brody, she texted me and said, how are you doing? And like with Pete away, how is that going or whatever? And I was like, it's been a tough one. Like I had to do the grieving, the like figuring out what to do with the body, figuring out how to tell Leela all by myself. And like, it's just been hard, but like we're getting through it. And she said, thank you for that very real answer.
Yeah.
And like that just, it's just so nice to have a friend who is like, no, please show me.
Yeah.
Show me it. Show me your pain.
And that's what I did. And then what the real, I, you know, we've told this story a couple of times to friends, so I think I'm getting better at distilling it. Mm-hmm. The big surprise, the first big surprise of the retreat was I thought that it would be too long, seven mm-hmm. days. I had done 4 days with Ram Dass.
Yeah.
Five? Something like that?
Yeah, 5 days.
5 days, which was beautiful, but you know, I did that twice. I went on a private retreat with Ram Dass, and the second time especially, I was kind of like, we can, this is... The second time, like, I remember I had a rental car, and I'd like, go get an ice cream.
And like a massage.
I went and got a massage.
Yeah.
We had a new baby at that time.
Oh, yeah.
There was parts of me that was like, let's
there's value to that type of retreat, yeah.
It was fine. I mean, it was great. And the time with Ram Dass was great. This was different. Anyway, I thought 7 days would be too long. And when I booked it, I was like, you know, if after 5 days, I'm like, I get it. We're out of here. Mm-hmm. Then I'll just give myself that allowance. And the punchline is, it was 7 days. It went like this. Every day we had a meditation mm-hmm. at 7:30 in the morning for an hour. Then 8:30 we had breakfast. Then at 11 we had another meditation for an hour. Then we had lunch. There was always food. There was a lot of food. Mm-hmm. Then at 4:30, so from lunch ends around 1 to 4:30 you were just free. 4:30 to 6:30, anybody that knows Rupert, if you don't know him, watch him on YouTube. I highly recommend it. It's just that for 2 hours. People ask questions mm-hmm. and he answers. That's how he teaches, question and answer. Mm-hmm. So you get to ask questions. We can get to what question I asked. I thought it was good, but I loved his answer is more mm-hmm. important. And then at 4:36, then at 6:30 dinner. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I just fell into a routine of going to bed around 9:30. Mm. And then I'd get up at 5:30 and that was every day. Mm-hmm. And the punchline is, I keep saying, here's the fucking, I never for 1 second felt like, is this over yet? Mm-hmm. And I, even as I'm saying that to you, I'm like, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Because it really was one of these things, one of Rupert's main teachings, I would say, if I had 15 seconds to talk to you. In fact, he summarizes himself like this. Peace and happiness are your essential nature, and you share that nature with everyone and everything. Mm. That's his whole thing in two lines. Mm-hmm. So peace and happiness are your essential nature, meaning looking for it in the external world is not only, it's just misguided. We don't have to look down on it.
Right.
But it's just not, that's not where withstanding peace and happiness are. You are peace and happiness. And the way that we think about that is like, just one little Rupert teaching. If you think about your awareness as a room, he goes, if I asked you to tell me what's in this room, you would tell me there's a bookshelf and there's a train set and there's a table with a computer on it. But very few people would say there's space in this room. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and that's consciousness. It's like we overlook it. It's like the screen in a movie. You're looking right at a screen, but you don't even think about it. You just think about the contents of the movie. An awareness or consciousness or your being or your sense of being yourself is the screen or it's the space in a room. But more interesting than just being like, oh, somebody's kind of pointing me towards my awareness, he takes it to the next step, which is what is the nature of that which is aware of my being? Mm-hmm. So one of the meditations we did was, what am I before sensations, experiences, anything, before experience? Mm-hmm. What am I before the emergence of experience? Mm-hmm. Then there was one that was more of a koan, which is what is but doesn't exist.
Ooh.
But that sounds like an unsolvable one. It's actually quite solvable. Exists, he tells us this all the time, exist comes from, the word means to stand out from. Out, like from
exit.
The back. X is, yeah, he would tell you what X means and what, but it means to stay. Attention is kind of also is like to bend toward. You give your attention. So you're taking your consciousness and bending it and pointing it towards. Right now you're pointing your attention at me. But he's like, before you bend it or point it, or before it houses a feeling or a perception or anything, a taste, a smell, what is the nature of the empty room? So take everything out and tell me about yourself. That's the main thing. And this was a week dedicated to that. I hear Rupert's voice, to that understanding. Meaning the beds were hard. and too small for me.
Yeah.
I'm literally staying in a convent. The food was fine. I have no complaints about the food, but it, you know, vegetarian food, I haven't been eating vegetarian lately. So I was kind of like, it's hard to get protein, eating whatever.
Yeah.
It was fine. It wasn't like, there was no like Asian fusion night. It was just kind of like retreat food.
Yeah.
Good retreat food, but not exactly blowing your hair back. You know, flooding you with endorphins is what I mean, or dopamine. The showers, you've heard me say this a million. The showers, first of all, the head of the shower went up to my nipples, and it was a shared bathroom, meaning your room had no bathroom. You had to go, like college, you'd have to go into the room, hallway, walk down, go in this shared bathroom, and take a shower. Shower, you know, water pressure's not great, cuts off. You're in a convent.
Yeah.
This is nun chic. So the water would cut off sometimes. You're soapy. It just cuts off. Then comes back on and it's scalding hot for no reason, like someone flushed a toilet.
Yeah.
And we were all living in that reality, 120 of us. And it was 120 of the happiest people I've ever seen in my life. Mm. But I can't speak to their happiness. It was a full week of absolute peace and happiness. Mm. And it wasn't because I was tired from being a dad. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because I was getting enough rest. I get enough rest now. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because I was sneaking away and writing scripts or answering emails or any of that. I put it all aside.
Yeah.
And all we did was for 2 hours in the morning, you'd think, so he does something called the pathless path, which is like, we're not going to do a mantra. We're not going to follow our breath. Mm-hmm. We're not going to think about anything. There's going to be no guiding. Mm-hmm. His meditations are like, are you aware? Ask yourself, am I aware?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you say yes, go to the referent of that yes. Mm-hmm. What is that yes referring to?
Mm-hmm.
Go there. And it was just called self-abiding. So you're abiding in the simple and undeniable sensation. We're all aware. Mm-hmm. He kept saying that. He was like, this is the most obvious thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone off the street, you would come up to them and say, are you aware that you exist?
Mm.
All the pathless path or non-duality or whatever is going into the sensation of being or knowing that you are that with which your experience is known. Mm. What is it that is aware of your experience? And then not just to know it or to analyze it, but to go in it and rest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we did. Mm. And then we'd have talks. And then during the long break, I would literally go by a creek and listen to a creek. And then I'd go to bed at 9:30, get up. I still did my Tony Robbins gratitude practice in the morning. I still did my reading in the morning. But all I was reading Rupert, reading Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And not for one second. Not so much did I not feel it dragging. I didn't feel it. Today we went to our coffee shop here in town. And my friend Max said, hey, welcome back. And I know this sounds weird. I didn't know what he was referring to because the retreat was so, this sounds like spiritual bragging or like I'm trying to make it magical. It's just what it is. The retreat was like self-deleting. It wasn't in time.
Mm.
It just didn't exist in time.
Cool.
So I didn't experience time.
Wow.
I missed you guys when every morning I'm doing my gratitude. I'd think about you. Sometimes I'd cry just remembering how beautiful our life was. But it was like another place.
Mm.
And it wasn't on the calendar. Mm-hmm. It was outside of time because that's, you know, that's what consciousness is. That's what awareness is. It's timeless.
Wow.
It's there are no attributes to it.
Right.
So I'll tell you anything we think is interesting to talk about. But the question I asked on the first day, actually.
Oh, bold.
Bold.
Yeah.
As I said, can we trust awareness? And I go, I see so many people suffering, and what's to say I'm not going to die? And I referenced an old joke of mine. I go, and I'll just wake up in a room filled with crabs,
mm-hmm.
and they just eat me. And that's just the wicked game that awareness wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And I referenced Gungi's book, Michael Gunger, where he has that line that I think about all the time, where he says, if you were infinity, what game wouldn't you play?
Right.
And the answer is you'd play every game. And I'm like, well, that's kind of terrifying. Because wouldn't you play the like clowns hitting you with salami game
mm-hmm.
if you're infinite?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very scary idea. And he, I can't, you know, hopefully it will be on YouTube, I'm sure at some point, but he was like, his creation idea is that the nature of consciousness is creation, is like expression, and it's boundless.
Yeah.
And it's in love with itself.
Right.
And it wants to express it and to know itself. This is all sort of metaphoric. So it creates, it manifests. Because the infinite can't know, that's what he said. He was like, the infinite can't know the finite.
Right.
He was like, if you wanted to look at this bottle, he pointed to a bottle on his table, you'd have to localize yourself as one point in this room to look at the bottle. Mm-hmm. You couldn't see, if you saw it from every possible angle, or even every person in this room, it would just become black. It would be nothing. Mm. To know it, you have to separate yourself and localize in one position, in the same way that when you have a dream, if you're on a beach, you can't experience that beach until you make yourself a subject on the beach to enjoy the object that is the beach. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and the infinite loves that and wants that so much that it will go into duality, even knowing that once you have joy, you have suffering. Mm-hmm. It risks that, like a mother will sacrifice her body and her sleep and her sanity and all of this stuff because it loves her baby.
Yeah.
And it wants to know the baby and to extend herself.
Yeah.
I was like, it's this love. And I go,
I love that.
But there's all this stuff happening here. Why would we elect to do this? And he's like, it's not that awareness is electing to do it. And I'm blending in some other conversations I had with my friend Tatiana, for example, and my friend Robert. They were like, don't forget, it's you.
Yeah.
It's the one awareness.
Right.
I was still having this like God over there wanting to torture me, wanting to fuck with me. It's like,
choosing for you, not giving you a choice in any way.
My friend Tatiana was like, it's like when we were infinite, it was like 65 degrees all the time. Mm. And we wanted to know what 98 degrees felt like. Mm. So we also had to make the thermostat go the other way to negative 10 degrees and all this, and so to get that spectrum going.
Yeah.
But she was like, don't forget, it's your dream. And this is when you start going like, oh, thy will be done. Mm. Or I trust in God, or I trust myself, capital S. Self is it's I was still doing that thing that God is somewhere over there. So you know, it's beyond my pay grade to address all of the suffering in the world, but the idea of like you can trust it was. And he was like, just he said, go to your sense of awareness now. And I did, and he goes, tell me about it. And I was like, it's vast, it's spacious, it's peaceful. He gave me a little attaboy. He was like, I think we can all tell that you really went there and it wasn't just something you read. And I was like, how do you know me so well? How do you know I need that? I love that. It was excellent. Speaking about people giving you just what they need.
Yeah.
So that was a beautiful moment.
And then once you were there, did he say, can you trust it?
No, thank you. And then he was like, now you're relaxed and you went into your awareness and you saw its qualities and you can trust it. But next time you're not relaxed, try to step back and go into your awareness.
Right. It's only the brain, like the thinking mind, that asks questions like, can I trust this?
Yeah, that's right.
Which is its job to a certain degree, but it over asks that and then it gets everything all worked up.
Completely. And he said the more times you get like habitually just check in with your awareness, which is what I was doing that whole week and what I've been doing since. You'll just have more data and the idea of a hell like that will just become less and less plausible.
Yeah, I really believe that. And I think that is true in so many ways. It's like the more you regulate your body from dysregulation, the more you you have the data to trust that. Or the more you go through difficult things and make it on the other side, you have the data to trust life. Like there's so many things that build trust, and it's only really experiences.
That's right. That's right. And it's sensation. It's all sensation appearing in awareness. And I had a difficult call home this week and my mom just sounded so sad and that's so hard on me and telling me to move back in with her and stuff. Just all the classics.
Yeah.
All the classics.
All the hits.
And one of the things that Rupert teaches is when you're having a difficult emotion, remember he says there's the Vedantic, which is I'm not the emotion. I'm the witnessing presence that is not touched by this emotion. I'm over here.
Yeah.
But what he really seems to be more into is the Vedantic, which is
the tantric.
Is the tantric. Yeah. You go towards it.
Yeah.
So in real time, I was having a really, my mom is going, why won't you save me from this life?
Yeah.
And I get this feeling and I was like, I'm going to try it. Mm-hmm. Is the space in the room troubled by the objects in it? Mm-hmm. Is it threatened? Mm-hmm. Is the screen colored or stained by what happens in the movie? Mm-hmm. And so, well, no, well, let's try. Then it must be safe for me to go towards this feeling.
Yeah.
And get so close to it that you can't even see it. It's like if you're still looking at it and giving it a boundary, you're not close enough. Go closer. I know we've talked about this other weeks, but I was doing it in real time and it was really, really helping. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, we're running out of time here, but, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it for weeks to come. When I told you about it, when I came home, I cried.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize until after the fact just how much it had meant to me.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it next week. There was a talent show. We'll talk about that next week. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I wanted to talk about this week was we had dinner. Rupert tried to have dinner at everybody's table. So everybody got to have one meal with him. And going into this thing, I swear, I was like, there's nobody in my life. I was listening to a Tony Robbins story where he really wanted to be on an airplane with Mikhail Gorbachev. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's fucking childish. Mm-hmm. Really? If I like, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
There's nobody in my life. Jerry Seinfeld, like he was trying to like get to a city so he could be on a plane with Mikhail Gorbachev to fly to this thing. And I was like, I wouldn't do that for anybody.
Yeah.
Seinfeld, Chappelle, fucking doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm not a child. I don't have anybody in my life that would get me that excited. Then I sit next to Rupert again. Tatiana helped make this happen. And I'm sitting right next to him. It was just for 20 minutes or so. And I got to ask him, I asked him about how he prepared for performing.
Right.
I was like, you know, I try to eat this kind of food and I try to have my caffeine this much before. And I was like, what do you do to prepare? And he's like, I walk out and I do it. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was just like, he was like, if there were 3,000 people in the other room and someone said it was time to go talk to them, I would walk over there and talk to them. And that sounds, maybe it doesn't sound as exciting to most people, but it was like God gave me this exact message, custom made for me, of someone who's just trusting themselves, trusting the universe, and interacting with it from a place of peace. Not getting a jacked heart rate and not trying to jack their heart rate so they can do what they can do, not putting jumper cables on their body and doing a power pose. And I realized after the fact, if he did do all those things, I would have been really disappointed because he just seems like a naturally occurring phenomenon.
Right.
And that's what he was doing. He made fun of me at the end of the meal. He goes, all right, I have to go prepare for tomorrow. Everyone laughed. And I called him really a salty good. Dog. It was really beautiful.
That's fun. I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
I like that.
And at one point, and I really will never forget it. I don't think he's seen my stuff. And that's obviously, I don't have to say this, but it is, I am fine with that.
And I have no problem
and
with that.
And I have no major problem with that. No, I really don't.
No, I know.
I really don't. There are other times in my life where that was more important to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the universe gave me people like Richard Rohr and Father Boyle that really fill that. So I don't need another whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So we're having the meal and he just looks at me. He's sitting right next to me. I'm talking about being a comedian or something. And he goes, what you do... And I think he means any artist, by the way, is he's like, you let people touch their true self over and over again. You let them taste their true nature over and over. Because he goes, when you tell a joke, you eke it out, you eke out the punchline, and there's this moment where the joke is revealed and it happens inside. Mm-hmm. It happens inside of them. There's this alchemy in the moment after the punchline, but before the laugh, everyone dips into themselves and then comes back laughing. Mm-hmm. They don't even know what happened. It's outside of their intellect. Right. And I'm just trying to broaden this out. It's the same way that music or dance or theater or painting. We also talked about Daniel Day-Lewis and we talked about Anthony Hopkins and all the different people that are, what they're really doing is helping people transcend their minds. But he specifically, just like Richard Rohr, gave me exactly, he loved me like I was him. And he was like, this is a comedian. I'm going to tell him something I believe about comedy. And when I left, this is the guy that was like, there's no one I'd want to be on a plane with. Who cares? I couldn't find my room.
Yeah, you were giddy.
I was giddy. And Tatiana, you know when you picked me up after my vasectomy and I was drugged up?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like that. And I was walking around and she, our other friend's name was Robert. And she was like, Robert is going to be over there. And I was like, who? I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who she was. I knew who she was, but I didn't know if you said anybody that wasn't there. I didn't know. And she took me to my floor and she's like, you're down there. And I was like, wow. Where are you going? Wow. It was like, it absolutely changed my life. That's what I started crying. Mm-hmm. Not just at, oh, I met this person, my teacher who I admire and all that sort of stuff. It was that it felt like God loved me so much.
Yep.
Or you could say I loved myself so much that I created this thing and put all of these experiences into it. And then this teaching and this person and then comedy. And I brought it all together, this meal. And like, the air stood still and a message like got zapped into my eyeballs. And I felt like a 14-year-old girl with a crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like I just was like teen beat the whole way home. And it, like I said, it felt like the love of God was poured. Like I was a lawn and it was just starting to flood with water and sunlight. And I was like, Gorbachev.
You're my Gorbachev.
You're my Gorbachev. But it was, I know I talked a lot. I'm sorry.
No, I love that. I really love that. I'm sorry I'm yawning. It's not you.
I yawned so many times earlier.
Yeah.
Just what's happening.
No, I'm so glad. I do think that that's how I interpret moments like that I've had is like, wow, this just feels exactly like God is loving me.
Yeah.
In the exact ways that I need. And I think that was exactly how to love you. And it makes me so happy that somebody who you give a lot of authority understand, like that's appropriate.
Yeah.
We have these people in our lives that we give.
True, I do.
That we give authority to.
Look at what I was saying. I was like, if he was like, I have to have a Red Bull 20 minutes, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
And he didn't disappoint me at all.
Yeah. And he, so it's like, you know, our parents usually have the first authority over us. And that's why what they say gets deep into our subconscious.
Yeah.
But then we can be reparented by other people who we give authority to.
Yeah.
And if you do it to the right people, it's a beautiful gift because he gave you the exact right cocktail of medication for your specific wounds. And it's so loving.
It felt like a customized chocolate you put in your mouth and it just tasted like everything you didn't even know they knew you liked peanut butter or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It was really overwhelming.
Oh, I love that.
The whole thing was perfect.
I'm so glad.
And it's, you know, just to be clear, it's like, because I was talking to Jed about it and I wanted to be like, I'm not saying, because Jed was like, I should go to a meditation retreat. I was like, you got to find the right thing. Yeah. Meaning, Rupert's retreats are selling just fine. Meaning, this isn't an ad and it's not an ad. I'm just saying like,
find the thing that does that for you.
Exactly.
And maybe it's Rupert and maybe
people have a propensity to be like, well, this Pete went there. I know there are people at that retreat that were watching the clock that weren't at all the meetings that probably, I know there's someone who left midway. So like, please don't say, I'm saying there's something over here that will definitely work. What I'm saying is I've done a lot of different teachers and a lot of different teachings and they all just kept distilling. And Rupert is exactly what I'm looking for. And everybody needs to find what they're looking for.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know why I felt the need to say that. Because I'm not saying he's a he's a medicine.
Absolutely. You know? I think it is an important distinction to not be like, this one person is the one answer. Like, no. That's not good for anybody.
And this one person wouldn't have even been the answer for me 5 years ago.
And this one person wouldn't even say that he's the answer. He would, no. I'm sure, like all good teachers say that he's just pointing to the truth that is inside you.
Yes, he does. But he you know, it's cute, and we can end on this. He didn't, he's like, I'm not a teacher. I'm just your friend.
Yeah.
I'm just your friend. I know that sounds kind of phony, but after a few days, you're like, I think this guy means
it. I think he thinks this.
It's really, really beautiful.
Very sweet. Well, I'm so glad you got that experience. And
thank you. We'll be hearing more about it as we go, I'm sure.
Yeesh. And now I will gently pass away.
And thank you for that week. It was my birthday present.
Mm-hmm. Birthday's coming up.
Yeah. So to go into 45...
Fully
Ruperted. No. Fully Ruperted.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Boy, I loved it. But anyway, check him out on YouTube and read Being Aware of Being Aware. If you've never read any of his, I would start with that one.
Yes.
Very short. All right. Valerie, I love you.
I love you.
And here we are.
Here we are.
And
keep it crispy.